It's 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Here's a reminder, you can find us not just on the radio, but online as well. Our website resides at jeffexchange.org. You can find program topics and recordings and a look ahead to the future edition of the Jefferson Exchange, the next edition of the Jefferson Exchange listed on our website. You can find us on Facebook as well, similar information there, somewhat more digestible format, along with the things you expect on social media, like videos and pictures and things like that. And the same information we send to Facebook goes through to Twitter as well. So jeffexchange.org, Facebook, and Twitter, all places to find the Jefferson Exchange online. And you can take part in our conversations as they happen. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. There are many points of disagreement between the timber industry and environmental groups. One of the largest is the issue of clear cuts, and the term is self-explanatory. The land is simply cleared of trees from one boundary to another, leaving a bare patch on the landscape where there was once a forest. Now, an environmental group is using clear cuts as an advertising point. Oregon, home of the clear cut, the ad reads. It's part of a campaign against legislation that Congress is expected to take up this week. Sean Stevens is the executive director at the group Oregon Wild and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Sean, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And what is the legislation that you are working against here?
Well, there's one piece of legislation that's currently in the U.S. Congress. It's a big piece of legislation called H.R. 1526, sponsored by a Republican from Washington State, Doc Hastings. But tucked inside that bill is our own piece of legislation that deals with Western Oregon's ONC forest lands, managed by the BLM here in Oregon. And so the bigger bill is a broad-based assault on the system of public lands across the entire country by shifting the focus of how we manage those lands for extraction, undoing some of the environmental protections like the Endangered Species Act, Clean Water Act on those lands. The smaller bill, sponsored by Representatives DeFazio, Schrader, and Walden here in Oregon, it isn't quite as bad, but it's still pretty bad, and it's specific to ONC lands.
ONC lands being the former Oregon and California Railroad grant lands that then were taken back by the federal government, and rather than pay property taxes, which the federal government doesn't do, they gave a split of the timber to the counties. And it's because of the decline in logging on those lands that the county coffers have just about dried up in some cases, which obviously is a big concern to them. So this then really has support from members of both political parties in Oregon, doesn't it, Sean?
The current ONC proposal has support, but if you listen to Representative DeFazio, who's the chief author of the bill, talk about it, he'll say, well, I'm not in the majority party, and it's tough to pass a bill out of the U.S. House of Representatives, and so I had to work with my Republican colleagues, and this is not a bill that I would have written if I had have been in the majority party. And I guess our argument would be that there may be bipartisan support here, but it's pretty begrudging, and it's probably not a good time to be writing this legislation with the types of Republicans that you have in the majority right now who are so anti-environment back in D.C.
Within the two bills we're talking about, the H.R. 1526 that Doc Hastings has introduced and the smaller bill that is more specific to the ONC lands, are the effects on ONC lands roughly similar?
Well, the way that the ONC trust bill, the title sort of gives it away a little bit, the way that it works is that you have about 2.5 million acres of these ONC lands in Western Oregon. And the ONC Trust Act would take 1.6 million acres of that land and effectively privatize it by putting it into a timber trust, a bunch of land to be managed essentially for profits for counties through industrial-style clear-cutting. It's essentially the Oregon Forest Practices Act with a little bit of extra protections. But as many who have driven around through the patchwork of private and public lands throughout the Coast Range and seen a lot of the private land management, That is clear cutting. That's what's allowed under the Oregon Forest Practices Act, something we really haven't seen in the last 20 odd years on public lands, federal public lands, and something that we feel just doesn't belong. We don't need to see a return to that sort of expansive industrial clear cutting.
And the fact is, the Oregon Forest Practices Act allows clear cuts up to what, 120 acres maximum size?
That's right, and it also allows the spraying of herbicides and something that you can't do in the same way on public lands. Much reduced protections for riparian areas, and we're subject to quite a push by the industry and a quasi federal or a quasi state agency called the Oregon Forest Resources Institute, OFRI. People have probably seen the ads or heard the underwriting on local public radio about talking about how we have the best State Forest Practices Act in the country, and it's just not the case. The protections on private lands and on our state forest lands are far less than what we currently have on federal public lands.
Are there other states that have more stringent Forest Practices Acts?
Yeah, our neighbors to the south and our neighbors to the north, actually. Both California and Washington have better protections for riparian areas, better protections for species, native species living on these lands. And you know, it's just, as Oregonians, we had the first one. We had the first Forest Practices Act, and so we have this sense that we were first to the game. We replant after clear-cutting, and therefore everything's great. But when you actually do the side-by-side comparison, you realize that green Oregon is behind our neighbors in terms of how we manage our private forests.
I have to believe, then, that the reason that the Forest Practices Act has not been updated to more closely parallel California and Washington is because the timber industry has pretty strong friends in the Oregon legislature.
You know, I think you're making the correct assumption there. You know, regardless of what political party you're from, there's an old term called the timbercrat. And we do have a legacy of a very strong timber industry. The importance to the economy has been declining steadily over the years, with things like tourism and outdoor recreation growing by leaps and bounds. But the political dynamic seems a little bit stuck in the past, where there are a lot of politicians, both at the state and the federal level, and at the local county level as well, who still have these strong ties. Some of it is financial ties. They are well-funded, and their campaigns are well-funded by the timber industry. And so I think you do see that hangover of the influence of the industry.
Sean Stevens is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the executive director of the group Oregon Wild, and we're talking about the home of the Clear Cut campaign, currently running advertisements in Oregon. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. So where did the idea for the home of the Clear Cut come from?
Well, we've been trying to think about ways that we could draw the public's attention to these new proposals, and one of the things that we kept circling back to, both Oregon Wild and our conservation partners that are helping us in this, the Sierra Club, the Center for Biological Diversity, and Portland Audubon Society, is we kept thinking, you know, people aren't aware that we're already seeing a lot of negative impacts from logging. There's just not that public knowledge of just how bad the Forest Practices Act and what that leads to in terms of problems for clean water, drinking water in many instances, native wildlife. More and more we're learning about the impacts that clear-cut logging has on global climate change, because these forests are some of the best carbon sinks in the country. And when you cut them down, you actually have a net carbon pollution for about 100 years. And so we were thinking about that, and we were realizing with these proposals to actually increase clear-cutting rather than solve our problems with clear-cutting, we needed to focus the public's attention on this specific issue. And we chose the places where we were going to run the ad because we wanted to highlight the fact that we have this green reputation in Oregon, and some of it is very justifiable. But we don't do a great job with our public lands or on our private forest lands of protecting them. And we thought, hey, outdoor recreation, that's actually what's drawing people to Oregon and bringing in a lot of business to the state. Let's put these ads in places like the Eugene Airport, where people are going to see them, and there's going to be a little bit of a shock. You know, you're coming to Oregon and you see a clear-cut billboard, and in some ways it's our dirty little secret that we still practice this practice and do it so in such a widespread way.
Are you concerned about any unintended consequences, like scaring people off? People cancel their reservations, don't come to Oregon because they see the campaign and think, forget it, I'm not going there.
You know, we definitely thought about that, but I think there's far more danger in the fact that the clear cuts are out there on the landscape than the fact that we're drawing attention to them with a billboard.
And is it just billboards? What are the positionings of the ads? Are they, I mean, anything in electronic media?
You know, right now we have the Eugene billboard, and we're going to be doing some electronic media through Facebook and maybe a few other channels. We're considering the Portland Airport as well. And you know, there's a coalition of groups of conservationists, as I mentioned before, that are working on this, and we're sort of also getting that out to our channels, trying to amplify the message and really, you know, let people know what's going on, both what the current practices are and what we could expect if some of these proposals for the ONC lands go through.
Sean, what do you expect to spend on the campaign, and who's paying for it?
We're paying for it. I mean, the Oregon Wild supporters and donors. We're not rich by any means as nonprofits, but when there are issues that are this important, we really have to pony up a little bit. And it's several thousands of dollars. Certainly not as much as the timber industry can spend, but we're trying.
Let us take a call. We have Ron and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sean Stevens, the executive director of Oregon Wild. We're talking about the Oregon Home of the Clear Cut campaign.
Thank you, Jeffrey. And I am not connected to the timber industry, and I'm not connected necessarily to the environmental industry. But what I notice is that the a lot of the definitions about what we're talking about in the ONC lands keep changing. And we now talk about a 60-year-old tree as being an old-growth tree. We now talk about, I've heard Oregon Wild talk about the redwoods. Well, there's very little, if no, redwoods in the ONC lands. I think that there's a middle ground somewhere. We can put in the kinds of logging practices we want to have and still use some of this land, only approximately half of it, for jobs and income-producing possibilities. I think that one of the ways that we potentially can get this off of the hot seat is to say that if we can't do anything in several years, that the lands get put up for sale. And that will bring the two, you know, that'll bring the sides together to make some sort of decision about doing something responsible and yet actually using the land in a way that benefits the people of Oregon.
All right. Thanks for the call, Ron. Let's get a response from Sean.
Well, I think Ron did have one point there that I'll expand on, but first I'd like to just kind of chime in on that 60-year number. You'll never see Oregon Wild talk about old growth being 60 years old. That term is a little bit of a nebulous one because many different scientists will give different definitions, and it's sometimes less dependent on the actual age of a forest or a specific tree and really the conditions in the forest. But we do have less old growth, less mature forests than we should have because of the history of logging in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And the estimate is somewhere upwards of 90% of old growth forests have been cut down in Oregon. A lot of that on private lands, but much of it on public lands as well. So, you know, the 60-year number is, I think, sort of a red herring. But I will agree with Ron on the fact that there is an opportunity out there to sort of put in the forest practices that we think can protect the resources that we care about, clean water, et cetera, get some jobs going, get some wood products coming out of coming to the mills, but doing it in a responsible way. And it's actually something that Oregon Wild and other conservationists have been supporting for 15 years since the Northwest Forest Plan went into effect. You have a place like the Siuslaw National Forest just to the west of Eugene, where Ron's at, and they're on the Coast Range. They had a lot of negative impacts from old-growth logging, but what they decided on 15 years ago is they were going to do restoration only. And they completely flipped the paradigm on the forest. They invited in all the stakeholders from the industry to environmentalists to the watershed councils. They haven't had a timber sale appealed, really, in the last 15 years, and they're one of the highest producing forests in the region as far as wood products going to the mills. And it's all through restoration-based stuff that Oregon Wild is supportive of. That's the sort of thing that we do think is the future. You can do that on ONC lands. The BLM has been hesitant to really jump in whole hog with this model. We're not sure why. And so I think that is the model for the future, not this idea that we can once again carve off half of the forest for extraction and let go. That's kind of what we did for the last 50 years is we said, well, we can carve off half more and then half more, and soon we're down to only 10% of the good stuff left.
Sean Stevens is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director at Oregon Wild. We're talking about the Oregon Home of the Clear Cut campaign that Oregon Wild and its friends are putting together to oppose legislation in Congress that seeks to take half of, roughly half of the ONC lands and put them into a trust that would allow logging at a greater rate than it happens today to put logs in the mills and money in county coffers. Join us on the Exchange with your thoughts on this at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. When you talk about restoration logging, though, at some point, though, Sean, are you done restoring and either have a complete forest that you don't want to touch or a complete forest that you do want to do some extractive logging upon?
You know, it's a really good question because there is a time horizon for this restoration logging. It wouldn't last forever. You're talking about going into areas that were clear-cut in the past, and you're going to try to restore them, get some of the smaller trees out that can send to the mills, but generally create a more natural forest environment. And, you know, whatever the estimate is, if it's 20, 30, 40 years for how long we have, what supply of restoration logging we have, that's a long time out to be able to make the decision once we get there. But what many of the proposals today are talking about is let's permanently take this land and permanently set it aside just for logging and not for anything else. And so I think it's true that there's a time horizon on the restoration, but we leave ourselves so many options at the end of that 30 years for whatever we want to do. If we decide we're going to go back in and log more, if we decide that carbon credits are so valuable that it doesn't make any sense to log it because these counties are going to be seeing such a windfall from carbon credits. So we leave ourselves options if we pursue the restoration route.
Well, you certainly got the attention of one of the principals in Congress thus far, Representative Peter DeFazio, has responded, at least publicly, has he responded directly to Oregon Wild as well?
He has. I think that it's an interesting situation because in many ways, Representative DeFazio has been a champ on our issues. He sponsored the Wild Rogue Wilderness. He sponsored the Devil's Staircase Wilderness, things that we are very supportive of and very happy to have his support for. And I think, you know, we don't envy Representative DeFazio's position right now. He's trying to solve a very complex problem for county funding that no one has really been able to solve in the last 40 years. He's in the minority party in Congress. But we do think he's taken the wrong route to try to solve it. So don't envy his position, but I think there was a better path than the one he took.
His contention is that Oregon Wild wants to block any action on management of the ONC lands. In fact, his quote is that the agenda is to eliminate all timber harvests in the ONC lands. Is that fair?
You know, I saw that quote, and it's not fair. It's completely inaccurate, and Representative DeFazio knows that it's inaccurate because we've been pushing our ideas to his office and to him on this restoration model, which, you know, if no activity is 200 million board feet a year, which is about what you're getting off of these BLM lands now, then, you know, tell that to Georgia Pacific, who's buying the logs from the Sayulsa National Forest, or tell that, you know, actually in the day after I think that quote ran by DeFazio, there was an article in the Medford Mail Tribune about a restoration logging seal going for almost twice of what it was appraised for. So, I mean, there's a demand out there for the restoration logging. You've got lots of conservationists across the state who are ready to work on that. We just don't want to be dragged back to these controversies of the 1980s where we're talking about clear cutting again and ramping up logging to really high levels that isn't sustainable and just something that taking us backwards instead of moving forward to the future.
There are, Sean, some mitigations built into the ONC legislation, at least the DeFazio version of it. Things like longer time rotations on when to cut, more wilderness protections, less mining on rivers. Any of those impressing the folks at Oregon Wild at all?
Oh, I mean, I think with the wilderness protections and if you're taking mineral withdrawals, obviously the wilderness protections are the things that I mentioned earlier, the Wild Rogue and Devil Staircase. Those are great. We do feel that they should be able to stand on their own because they've been around and people have been working on them for about 5, 6, 7 years now, and they've been introduced separately from Representative DeFazio's ONC bill. So we think those can stand on their own. I'm not going to say we don't like them because we do. With the case of Devil's Staircase, we've been working to protect that area since the early 80s when it was left out of the 1984 wilderness bill. But I think on the longer rotations and some of those slight modifications to what you would just be doing regularly on industrial private forests, they're fine, but it doesn't really get away from the primary problem with the bill, which is you're taking all this public land, you're essentially privatizing it, and you're essentially saying this is for private industry now. And we feel public lands have a higher calling than that.
Let's take a call. We have John and Vanita on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sean Stevens from Oregon Wild.
Morning, Jeffrey.
Hi.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you guys. Yeah, I've struggled with this with folks since way back, late 70s, and then when it really flared up in the 80s. And the fella called in earlier was talking about definitions and language changing. And I used to call in, including this station here, this show, when there was some talk going on way back with the guy before you, Golden. But, you know, when people start talking old growth, plug your ears and start screaming, because the old growth can mean anything that anybody wants it to mean. What I try to get people to recognize is the fact that you can use one word or one term, and it's virgin timber. When you say that, it explains what it is. You can't change that. And I don't want any of that cut down unless it's a threat to human life, like in a park or something, because they've already robbed 85% of it probably, and that's accessible, not roped in inside of some kind of a boundary. And I'm a fifth-generation Oregonian in my family, some of the first people logged here. Another thing is maintenance. When they were really ripping it down in the 70s, up in the Willamette, richest forest in the world, they didn't set up a trust. They spent a lot of it in Vietnam and just threw it away. They didn't set up a trust to take care of the forest. I mean, they could have put 5% aside, and they would have been able to maintain roads and parks and everything a lot better. No, they just took it. We need to get harsh with ourselves about how we're going to live with our land.
All right. And so is the point on virgin forest, if a forest has been touched since white settlement, it is not considered old growth in your mind? John?
No. If virgin timber is untouched forest, primeval forest, it's like the fellow has mentioned Devil's Staircase. You can go in there and see things that you don't see around it.
All right.
Because it hasn't been disturbed. There's mycelium, and there's things that goes on in an original forest that hasn't been butchered up. And I'm not against logging. Please believe me that. I've worked in it all my life around it. I'm a cabinet maker now. I've sold lumber. I've made lumber.
Okay, let's give Sean a chance to respond because we have less than a minute now.
I'm on the radio. Bye-bye.
Okay. Sean?
Yeah, I think John makes a really good point. As I mentioned earlier, the term old growth can be a nebulous one. So I won't plug my ears and scream when someone says it, but I will listen harder if someone's talking about primeval forests that are virgin. I think another term for that is native forests. And that is really what we don't have a lot of, as John mentioned. And that's part of the reason that we want to see some of that regrow back to be what it was and really start healing the forest. There's an amount of activity that we can have in them, but we don't want to go back to where we were in the 70s and 80s.
All right. Home of the Clear Cut campaign now underway. Congress taking up the ONC bills probably sometime this week. Sean Stevens, Executive Director, Oregon Wild, thank you.
Thanks, Jeffrey.